Hi, everybody. My name is Linda Brown, and I'm a grateful member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon and Al-Ateen. And it's good to every so often do things like this because it forces me to go back and reread some of the big book. So when Billy and I talked, and Lynn and I talked, and then Sam wrote the letter, it was it talked about the family afterwards. And so what I want to do for the next, hopefully not 40 minutes, maybe a half hour or so, is talk to you a little bit about what my recovery has been like, or what my life has been like since my husband got into recovery. Because he was probably 2.5, 3 years sober when I got into Al-Anon. So I need to tell you a little bit about what I was like before I got into Al-Anon. And I can say that I was a loving wife who was very interested in his recovery. That was my major point of view. In fact, I went to a lot of open AA speaker meetings with him, even some discussion meetings, so that I could be sure to hear what he was going to need to remember in case he forgot it. And if, you know, I did this number. Did you hear that? But the thing is, so I went to, for the first couple years that he was in recovery, I went to a lot of AA meetings. I went to one or two Al-Anon meetings, came home and told him, I'm not that sick, thank you very much, and didn't go back. I don't know what it was that just didn't click for me at the very beginning. Probably I wasn't ready. I think we all reach a point of desperation. And I'll tell you a little bit about my point of desperation. Like I said, he was about 2.5 years sober. And he was going through a rough time. And so I was being very responsible. I would ask him, have you talked to your sponsor today? Aren't you getting ready to go to a meeting? Aren't you going to go to a meeting tonight? You know, and finally, a Tuesday night in September of 1988, he did this number to me. He held up his hands and said, leave me alone. He says, it's taken everything that I've got to keep me sober. I can't worry about you right now. Well, I was crushed. He couldn't worry about me. And so I was in tears and went to running out of the house to my first Al-Anon meeting for me. I don't remember a thing that was said there. All I know is I cried the entire time, and I remember that at the end of the meeting, they hugged me and told me that I was in the right place to keep coming back. And since that time, for a little over, almost 21 years now, a little over 20 years, I have been an active member of Al-Anon. And by that, I mean I have a home group. My home group is Thursday night at Johnston Willis Hospital. And it's called Courage to Be. It is a large Al-Anon group. It's very healthy. We deal with the solution, not the problem. We believe in sponsorship. We believe in doing the steps. We believe in working, using the tools of the program. We believe in our literature. I came about those beliefs and that home group sort of slowly. During the first couple years that I was in Al-Anon, I was going to a lot of the Al-Anon meetings that occurred at the same time Ross was going to an AA meeting. Pretty much that meant a lot of the time he was just opening Rebo's down in Richmond, the clubhouse. And he, you know, according to me, if the doors were open, he thought he had to be there. And I got my first resentment because I resented the fact that he was spending so much time at Rebo's, making sure everything was going straight. He started a commuter meeting that was 5:30, which meant he was late getting home from work. That meant I was late fixing dinner. You know, all these things, just on and on and on. And I wasn't working any of the tools. I had a friend who came in around the same time I did, and I asked her to be my sponsor, and she didn't have a sponsor. She had never done the steps. She came in about the same time I did, went to pretty much the same meetings I did. So she said, well, I'll be your sponsor if you'll be my sponsor. Because somebody had told us we need to have sponsors. And so that was what we did. And for the first couple years, that's where I was. That was the only thing. You know, I lived on the fellowship. And then Cindy went her way, and she found what she needed in church. Her husband was in and out, so I guess she, I don't know what she felt, but anyway, she found her solution in church. And that was fine, but Ross was still sober, he was still going to meetings, so what was I supposed to do? So I started looking for another sponsor. That was my first mistake. And I found a woman that had what I wanted. Her name was Jean. Her husband had never been, you know, at first I thought, well, I've got to find somebody whose husband's in recovery so that she could share, you know, what it was like for the two of them to be in recovery and give us a guide, be a guide. Never focusing on the fact that I need to work about, take care of me and work on me. Jean's husband had never gotten sober. She had three children. I think all of whom have problems, but that was not for me to say. Her son had a lot of both drug and alcohol problems, and she had a hard time dealing with that. But she didn't have, and she told me constantly how lucky I was that we were both in recovery. She had been in Al-Anon a lot longer than I had. She had done the steps. She read the literature. She was probably one of the most spiritual people that I had ever met. The other thing is she was non-judgmental, and I came into this program being so judgmental. You know, it was just that I was, I looked at everybody and compared your outsides with my insides, and I've heard that from a lot from AA speakers, but it happened to me too. You know, I felt the hole in the soul, and y'all didn't look like you had one. So, and so Jean was very judgmental, and she always laughed at me. She says, Linda, I'm old. I just don't remember anything. It's not that I don't judge people. I just don't remember what it was all about. And she was extremely spiritual. Now, she did a lot of things that, you know, we were not alike, which was interesting because I had always thought, well, I had to get somebody just like me who thought the same way I did. But she was extremely active in Al-Anon. She believed in this program. She worked the tools of the program. And so she started me on a journey by really getting me involved in service. And so as I did the steps, I was already focusing outward to get me out of me and to start looking at doing for others. And it started with being the treasurer of a group, which I came home and told Ross, I said, I'm the treasurer of the group. And he laughed. He said, that you can't balance a checkbook. And I went back and told him, I said, I don't think I can be the treasurer because I'm not good at keeping a checkbook. They said, well, we'll just cut your salary. And I took me a while to get that. Anyway, I ended up being treasurer for this group for a long time. And then, you know, got into doing other things. And at the time, when I first got in, I was looking at being powerless over Ross. I heard the three C's, I didn't cause it, I can't control it, I can't cure it. But it took me a while to take that from my head to my heart, to believe that I really had no control over whether or not he drank. And I think that probably the first three steps, when I looked at those, there was a point of surrender. And when I take people through the steps now, the people I sponsor, I try to remind them that it's not something that you do automatically. Or you not do it once and then it's done. But with the first three steps, you know, it took me a while. I had to change my idea of God, because the second step talks about a higher power that's going to restore me to sanity. I had to change my idea of myself, which was that I was insane. There were times when he, even sober, when he was in a bad spot, when the ism was there. And the family afterwards talks about the ism. It talks about the characteristics that go with the disease of alcoholism. It's not just drinking. So the thing, and you know, I would hope, well, he was driving like an hour to and from work. And I thought sometimes if he just didn't come home tonight, it would be okay. My life would be fine. And so I hear, he laughs because I always like the speakers that have tried to kill their husbands. I did not do that. I may have thought about it, but I didn't do it. The other thing is, you know, I heard people in meetings talking about that, and they laughed. And I had always thought about the fact that if I said anything bad, or I had a bad feeling, it made me a bad person. And so I had to look at myself. And of course, that comes a lot with four. But it also came a lot with my sponsor, because I call her. She says, don't talk to him. Call me if you get upset. And so what she was trying to do was stop me from reacting. And so I'd call her and I'd say, you wouldn't believe. And I'd go on and on and on. And she'd say, what world are you living in? It can't be like that. How did you come to see it this way? And so I came to believe that I have a disease of perception also. And so she helped me walk through the process of seeing reality as it really is, and not take everything that Ross did as being personally against me. It's interesting, y'all all say it's all about you. Well, it's not. It's all about me. And the thing is, you know, it's hard for people in Al-Anon to believe that we can be just as self-centered as the alcoholic. And so for us to find that we need to have a spiritual program, not a religious program, but a spiritual program that we can live by, is something that's just real. It's foreign to a lot of people that come into Al-Anon. It's interesting because in the family afterwards, one of the things that I have underlined from a big book study that I went through, it says all members of the family should meet on common ground of tolerance, understanding, and love. And I don't think that Ross and I, when I came into Al-Anon, had that common ground. We were married, but we had to figure out how to argue. He grew up in a home with boys, and they were loud, and whoever was the loudest got his way. I grew up, even though I'm not an only child, I grew up as the only child at home, and I was the only girl. And I never saw conflict in my parents. And so if it got loud, the first time we had an argument, I went in our bedroom and shut the door. And almost like dared him to come in. So I had to work, you know, that was part of the things that I had to work through in figuring out how to understand him. The other thing is, when I came into Al-Anon, I wanted to understand the compulsion to drink. And so in addition to the family afterwards, you know, I have done big book studies. And when I sponsor a person, they read the doctor's opinion. Because to me, that gives me a picture. And I may know about it, but I will never understand it because I'm not an alcoholic. And that took a lot to admit, because that means I am really pretty powerless over whether or not he drinks. Probably 8 years into my recovery, during the first 8 years, not only did I give Ross over, but if you talk to Al-Anons, a lot of times we'll talk about that we are powerless over people, places, and things. And, of course, if you read Dr. Paul's story in the big book, you're going to also figure out that it comes from there. So one of the things that I had to realize is that I was powerless over the people at work. I was powerless over situations in my family. And I was also powerless over life and death. And I can remember my mother was dying. She was in a coma in the hospital. And we were buying one house and selling another. And everything was set so that, you know, we were going to move on Tuesday. I had to go back home on Monday so we can finish packing and we could plan everything out. And I had, you know, called the power company, called the cable company, because God forbid we do without cable one day or from one day to the next. And feel like taking his clicker away from him. And so I ended up, we got a call that Monday when we were in the middle of packing, and our real estate agent said, it's not going to happen. And I remember running around the house screaming at God, why are you doing this to me? You know, I've got all I can take right now. Why are you doing this to me? And literally screaming, which shows how much against God's will I was, even 8 years into Al-Anon. And after, it's interesting because we didn't close the next day. Our real estate agent tried to do everything she could to help us, but we didn't move the next day. It was one of those things, the first loan had to close, for the second loan to close, for the people that were buying our house, for their loan to close, for us to close on our house. And so, you know, went to bed with a migraine, got up the next day, worked a couple days, then went back down to Portsmouth to be with my mother for the last few days of her life. And we had come back, it was 4th of July weekend, and the doctors had told us, they had stopped life support and everything like that. They said she could last for a long time, even though she's not eating and getting liquids and things like that. So they said for us to come back to Richmond, and we did. And we got the call in the middle of the night that said, you know, Mama had passed away and that we need to come home. And the next morning, I took our house keys to our next-door neighbors that we had lived next door to for 8 years. They took care of our animals. They brought in our mail. They brought in our newspaper. They even called our minister and let them know what was going on. They literally took care of us. If I had had my will done my way, we would have been in a new house in a new neighborhood where we didn't know anybody. And my will would have just been, I would have been crazy because I would have had to find somebody to take care of the dog and the cats and all this sort of stuff. We finished the funeral. We were driving back to my brother's house that Friday. I got a call from the real estate agent. She says, you can close tomorrow. And so God knew where I was supposed to be. And that helped me to understand that God has a big picture and that God knows, you know, what's best for me. I didn't think God cared about little me until I started blaming him for stuff. And so the thing is that I think at that point in my recovery, I truly did a third step. Even though I had done the four-step inventory, you know, I had started working on, this is what Ross always laughs about, the Al-Anons that want to work on their character defects. And, but, you know, so I began to see things, the program, the steps, differently. One of the things that we do is we do a lot of taping. And we've taped predominantly AA step studies. And so I hear a lot of AA speakers. And I really think that for the alcoholic, it is truly life and death. That you come in here serious about it. A lot of people come into Al-Anon thinking, if he would just get sober, my life would be fine. And they talk about working on their character defects, not having God remove them. I truly believe that this is a spiritual program and that we have to take the same spiritual path that the alcoholics do, or a marriage will never stay. A relationship will never stay. It's interesting because in the family afterwards, it talks about laughter. It talks about wanting us to be happy, joyous, and free. That's God's goal for us, is to be happy, joyous, and free. And so it really has, you know, this chapter brings a lot to mind. And it also says on the last page, on 135, it says, whether the family goes on a spiritual, goes on a spiritual basis or not, the alcoholic member must, if he would recover. So what I had to realize is that I had to find a spiritual program for me. It was interesting because I have a lot of people that are new in the program talking about, well, when do I start 11-step work? And I said, tomorrow morning or tonight, whenever, you know, pick a time and start it now. And many of the people that come into Al-Anon, the first thing they buy is a daily reader. Now, I'll tell you that for a year and a half, I had a daily reader I read from daily and never realized that there was an index in the back, that if I was feeling fear or I wanted to talk about letting go of something, that I could go to an index and look it up and find a page. So the thing is that I came in real rules and regulations oriented. It's interesting because I think alcoholics are risk takers. They enjoy, you know, living on the edge. Well, I didn't, but I liked a little bit of that. And Serenity got very calm and a little bit boring. And so I had to find, you know, to not be bored, I had to find a spiritual way of life. It's interesting because Ross was doing his 11th step work from very early on in recovery. And this is the good thing about having a person, a family member or a partner who's in recovery, so that you can, because I saw what he was doing. I saw he had a sponsor. I saw he sponsored people. I saw he went to meetings. I saw he was of service. And I saw every morning that he would have, I think it was the 7 minutes with God, which CC talks about. And I would be fixing breakfast and packing our lunches for work and thinking, well, look at him, he's not doing anything, and look at me, I'm working so hard. And I finally complained to my sponsor about it. And she says, get up 5 minutes early. Take your time. If you don't have enough time when you get up 5 minutes early and do it. And so I began to have truly a spiritual practice in my life that got me centered, and I do mine first thing in the morning, actually before he gets up. And it's interesting because I use some Al-Anon literature, and when I first came into Al-Anon, we only had one daily reader, the One Day at a Time book. And since then, we've had two more come out, so every time a new one comes out, I switch over and go to a new book. We also have some outside spiritual material that I use. And then the other thing that is in both Al-Anon and AA literature that I use is, because I was never good at meditation, I always thought that was, you know, I have to sit and be quiet and concentrate. And what somebody said is, you listen to God. And I started using the Prayer of St. Francis, which is on our One Day at a Time bookmark and little pamphlet, little wallet-sized card, and is in at the ninth step for in the 12 and 12, the A 12 and 12. And so the thing is I started using that because I think it says what God would have me be. And if I listen to, if I read that and I remember what it is, what's being said there, that I'm to understand rather than to be understood. I'm to love rather than to be loved. You know, the compassion that we feel for our fellows comes from that feeling. It's getting out of yourself. And so that's something I use. And I think as long as I close my readings with that, it may not be that I can sit quietly for minutes to listen to God, but I at least feel like I have a picture of where God wants me to go that day. I firmly believe that God talks to me through other members of Al-Anon in meetings. It's amazing the time that I go to a meeting and I'm worried about something or involved in something and I hear exactly what I need to hear. My sponsor, Little Jean, who took me through the steps and got me involved in service, died about 6 years ago. And as she got older, she was in her 80s, and she was doing public outreach. That was her thing. She loved it. She loved to go into jails. She loved to go into institutions, into treatment facilities, into schools. And so as she got so she couldn't see to drive at night, I began to take her. And she used to say, well, Linda will do that. And so I got volunteered a lot. Well, I'm still doing public outreach, you know, 6-8 years later. But the thing is that a lot of times, if I'm left to my own devices, I think, well, gee, I'm so busy, and I have so much to do, and I really need to sit and read this, you know, romantic novel. But Jean wouldn't let me do that. She knew that I had to get out of me and be of service to live this program. And it, you know, so that was an example. She was truly an example of working a spiritual program and living that spiritual program. I'm now the treasurer of our district, so they have not learned their lessons. I still get to be treasurer. And, you know, I have to come up with budgets. And it's interesting because I was always so black and white that, and this has led me to get into working with a group of people and not dominating and saying, well, this is what we're going to do and how we're going to spend money and all this sort of stuff. And so the thing is through service, I've learned to be a better person. I feel strongly that way, that I've learned to be a better person. One more thing. I'm still active in service. At my district level, I've been active at the area level. You know, so I've done a lot of things in service, and I still feel that I need to be involved, whether it's chairing our district breakfast that's coming up in September, or whether it's answering the phone for Phone Watch. But during the time that I've been in Al-Anon, I was an Alateen sponsor for about 6 years. And I had a preteen group that's 9 to 12. And these are kids that are raised in alcoholic homes. Some parents are in recovery, some are not. Some parents bring the kids. Some aunts and uncles bring kids. It was not my responsibility to figure out how they got there. But the thing is that I would see nine-year-olds come in and think that they were in charge of the house and making sure that everything was okay. And that, you know, it was interesting because if ever there was a doubt in my mind that this was a family disease and that we need to have family recovery, it was when I was working with the Alateens. Because they were young kids, some who had parents in recovery, and some who had parents that were in and out. So they were learning how to live the program, how to do the steps, how to read the literature, and how to be of service. They would help each other. And it was just an amazing way for me to see, first, that it is a family disease, and second, that we can recover from that disease. It's interesting because I had two girls in the, my Alateen group, and one of the mothers went back out. The mother went back out. And the dad was saying, you know, we've got to take care of this, we've got to do this, we've got to do the other. And the girls would say, Dad, you just got to let it go. And he'd come to me and say, what are you teaching them? But the thing is that it truly, I mean, even for kids that young that come in to recovery, that the family afterwards can be better. We can all grow from this. The family afterwards, you know, talks, in the family afterwards, it talks about, you know, being happy, joyous, and free. And I feel that that's where my life is. Now, I don't know whether that's his, but I don't take his inventory anymore. I used to, but I don't anymore. Because he's told me to not do that. But the thing is that one of the things that I have, when I was going through, looking through my big book, I was taking one of my sponsees through the big book. She wanted to do that. And so I said, sure, I'll do it. And I finished up the 11th step part of the book. And I had written in there, and I don't know where I got this, that happiness is being content with what things, with the current situation, or with the now. And I never lived in the now. I lived in the past. I was so crazy, I would even reword conversations that had happened so that they could come out differently. Or I lived in the future. All my what-ifs were negative. I constantly worried about, well, what if this happens and what if... And Ross asked me one time, I was sitting worrying. I think he probably asked me, what are you doing? And I said, I'm worrying. And he says, what are you worrying about? And I told him, and he says, well, what if it doesn't happen? And all of a sudden I realized, well, I've just wasted an afternoon. And so in the family afterwards, one of the things that we can see is that we both help each other through rough times. I think that I have found happiness because I'm going through Al-Anon because I've learned to live in the now. And hearing a lot of AA speakers and being involved in AA conferences and things like that. I find true joy. I had not laughed because that was so serious to keep him sober before I came in here. It was really hard work and very serious. And I came into Al-Anon and I learned to laugh. And, you know, not just the but the really the gut laughing that where you're enjoying life. And I find a new freedom. And I think that freedom comes from giving it away. Because I'm out of me. And I think I have, you know, it comes from my spiritual program. I'm not in charge anymore. I try to be at times. And yeah, the thing is it's not, I'm not perfect. And somebody said, well, you know, when do you finish doing the third step? And I said, tomorrow. Because I think that each day I have to turn my will and life over. And in order to have the blessing that I have from this spiritual program. And with that, I'm going to close. Let's take a little break, and you'll come back and hear the other side of the story.